This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Atrocities are witnessing them. And having had such a kind of a nice upbringing, church boy, Boy Scout, I was valedictorian, I was all-conference athlete. Really, everybody knew that I was going to make them proud when I became an adult. Mm-hmm. It was a poor town. When I came back from Vietnam, I was beginning to ask this question of, wow, I participated in something that was so absurd, so criminal, so diabolical. How does that happen so easily? Mm. That somebody follows orders. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know it's common, it's somewhat typical, although there were people who weren't going, but I was not the type that questioned authority mm-hmm. or questioned my government. And to think that I had followed orders to go with 40 men, all of us with backpacks and guns and M16s and M60 machine guns, going to another country to participate in destroying a culture and villages because we were told they were evil communists. My commander called them vermin. Mm. By the time I was there 1 month, only 1 month, I knew this was that I was the savage, and that Thomas Jefferson, who coined the words in the Declaration of Independence, the merciless Indian savages. Yes, that is in our Declaration of Independence. I thought he had it completely backwards. Mm. My European ancestors were the savages. Mm. And so they demonized the people they came to steal the land from and called them savages. And then, of course, we went from that to stealing African Americans and bringing them over here. And I thought, wow, these origins, I didn't really fully comprehend just how diabolical it all was, and that I had become part of it. Mm. And I thought I was going to be a successful, quote-unquote, U.S. American, which meant a career with money and
power,
security.
Prestige.
Yeah. And I knew it was all a lie. And so I wrote the book. I had to study anthropology, archaeology, evolutionary biology, psychology, to understand the human condition through my journey's eyes, mm-hmm. my human condition as one person, and maybe as a metaphor for what happens when you get really dumbed down into the rhetoric of your nation. And so
when
the
you
book attempts mm-hmm. to describe my process of being liberated from that.
Was interesting that as... What age were you when you went to Vietnam?
Well, that was another thing. I was 27.
So you were old, dude.
I was old, and that was another thing that made it difficult for me to comprehend that I had been so dumbed down. I had a master's degree when I went to Vietnam in criminology. Mm-hmm. I should have known about the crimes of state, but I didn't. It was the crimes of the poor I knew about, but not the crimes of the state.
Right.
So that was another reason I was so ashamed for so long, that what was my excuse? I wasn't 18 or 19. Mm-hmm. I was 27. I turned 28 in Vietnam on July 4th, my birthday. So I wasn't what you'd call a youngster.
Right.
And that to me made it all the more difficult to explain to people. For 10 years, I didn't tell anybody I'd been in Vietnam.
Ah.
When I came back. I mean, I was in circles, but wouldn't have known what I was doing.
Right.
And so I wasn't going to tell people I was in Vietnam. I didn't want people to think that I was that stupid.
Right.
Oh. Or ignorant.
Wow. So so the book was an opportunity for you to kind of reflect, get deeply into the reasonings inside yourself, but as well as U.S. policy. And so,
well, the history, yeah. I had to get into U.S. imperial history. It was all part of the pattern. See, I realized there was a pattern to my country's history, and the pattern was military interventions, always justified with noble-sounding rhetoric, killing other people who we did not think of as worthy. And so my mantra, which has been my mantra for a long time, is we are not worth more and they are not worth less. We're all one.
Yes, and I'm going to get a little bit more into detail to that in just a minute, because we're going to go and we're going to ask listeners to become members of KBOO, and we're going to ask them to call 877-500-5266. And we're going to bring in some fabulous volunteers who are going to help us tell people about the opportunity to support KBOO. Can we do that now?
We can. Joanne, this is Brian. I'm out here in the Membership Central area, a.k.a. known as the back studio here at KBOO. And Joanne, thank you so much for bringing Brian Wilson to the air. What a fascinating story. And it's only, you know, KBOO is here for you every day of the week. Joanne's here every Thursday with her talk show. Brian has come in to give of his time to help support his book and to tell his story. We need you, the listener. We need you, the listener, to go to your telephone right now and call us, 877-500-5266, or if you're online, kboo.fm. This is a fascinating story. You can get this book, Blood on the Tracks, The Life and Times of S. Brian Wilson, for a $60 minimum pledge. That's $5 a month if you want, whatever is comfortable for you. We have 6 autographed copies of this book. It looks to be a fantastic book. This is the gentleman that Joanne is talking to right now on the air on KBOO. So call us, 877-500-5266. Become a member of the radio station that brings you fascinating information, news, and interviews such as this very one right here on Thursday morning talk radio with Joanne. It's a rare treat to have a resource like KBOO, and we're 45 years old. This year, friends, 45 years of bringing you the best in news, information, and music, commercial-free, right here at this very little radio station in Portland, the one that's been supported by you out there for all these years. If you're not yet a contributing member to KBOO financially, you are with your ears, but now time to open up the pocketbook and give a little bit of your hard-earned cash, and we know it's hard-earned, to KBOO by calling 877-500-5266, or online if you're on the web, kboo.fm. Click on the Donate Today jar in the upper right-hand corner. It takes you to the secure site. You can donate there if you'd like, but we'd really love you to call and get a copy of Brian Wilson's book, Blood on the Tracks. For a $60 minimum pledge, you can give more if you'd like. Whatever the amount is, it's up to you, but we're asking for a $60 minimum pledge to get a copy of this fantastic book. Joanne's talking to the author right now in the studio. This is a rare treat, friend, so get in on this, 877-500-5266, online at kboo.fm. Do it now. Start out the day right, 877-500-5266. We're going to get back to Joanne right now.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate the wonderful volunteers who are helping to make this membership drive successful. So, Brian, I want to jump right back in because we're going to be going back again. So we were talking about your self-education. You had to come back after Vietnam and actually start connecting the dots about why.
I'm still connecting.
And you're still connecting the dots. Well, that's heartwarming to know that you still don't think that you have all the answers.
No.
You got back. For 10 years, you said you didn't tell anybody that you had been in Vietnam. You started doing some work. You were working with the Veterans Administration for a while.
Well, I was working with a vet center, yes,
that was
funded by the state of Massachusetts.
And that experience, what was that like for you?
Well, then I realized even more. This was in the 80s, early 80s, I was doing that. So that was like 12 years after I was out of the military,
right.
I realized just how truly heavy the Vietnam experience was for a lot of veterans. I mean, I wasn't involved with veterans in the 70s. I was doing a lot of interesting things.
Right.
but I did not want to be involved with veterans. Uh-huh. I was not a veteran.
You didn't want people to know you were one.
I didn't even think of myself as a veteran. Wow. It was like, that was past tense. I didn't want nothing to do with it. I just realized in the 2 years I was directing this vet center that, 12 vets committed suicide I was working with. I was dealing with PTSD and homelessness. Bush vets that were living in the woods, people would tell me they were where they were. I would try to go find them and see if they wanted to file a claim with a VA.
Right.
It was really something to realize just how this war had affected us, and it had affected me. And I had earlier, 10 years earlier, when I passed the bar in D.C. and was going to be a lawyer, I realized I couldn't stand up for the judge when the bailiff said, everybody rise. I couldn't look at the flag that was always up front. And I actually left after 2 weeks of practicing because I could not comply with the protocol. And I thought, I really screwed up. But it was so viscerally strong in my body. Like, oh, I have to automatically stand to attention when the judge, a man in a black robe, comes in.
Right.
And my body didn't allow me to do it. My brain said, Brian, just do it. You don't have to like it.
Right.
And I didn't.
And your body just
And so that out. Was a sign of how deeply I was affected about symbols.
Right.
The symbols themselves, the black robe, the man, the flag.
Right.
Viscerally strong response.
Wow.
And so this is 10 years later with vets, and I'm realizing, wow, most of us had some kind of experience that shook us to our soul,
right,
and often destroyed our souls and never got it back.
That's right. And so how did the Vets for Peace, how did you connect with that group?
Well, I was, earlier I had been a member of Vietnam Veterans Against the War. But that was a national organization, and there were splits in it. And so I kind of didn't know how much to be part of that, except in spirit, Vietnam Veterans Against the War, yes.
Right.
But when Veterans for Peace came along in 1985 with a clear statement of purpose that they are against war, And they would work nonviolently to end war, I joined immediately because I thought that is the kind of group I want to be associated with. And so I started in 85, and so I've been a member of Veterans for Peace really since 1985. It's kind of like the tribe.
Mm-hmm.
If you have to live in the United States, this is a tribe of people who have been wounded. We've been wounded. We've been brainwashed. We participated in crimes against humanity because of it. And then we came to our senses and realized, I don't think that's really who I'm really about.
Mm-hmm.
And so you kind of participate in a process of atonement, if you will,
right,
making amends,
right,
rediscovering our humanity, recovering our humanity.
Right.
So that's an organization that, and we have a chapter here in Portland, of course, I'm part of.
That's near and dear. I can feel the emotion attached to that organization,
near and dear
to the heart, huh?
Yes.
And so that's an organization that's given you the opportunity to travel, meet a lot of vets, did that somehow lead you to doing civil disobedience actions?
Well, I would say that I had an independent path that was kind of emotionally and intellectually supported by people in Veterans for Peace, but I did things like going on long fasts,
mm-hmm,
leading delegations of veterans into Nicaragua and Salvador.
Mm-hmm.
Those were not supported by Veterans for Peace. They were considered a little too radical.
So you've been too radical for your radical friends.
But I was okay. And then when I started blocking munitions trains in Concord, California, there were a group of us vets involved in it, but it wasn't a formal, organized,
mm-hmm,
organizational event. And
right,
of course, that's where I lost my legs and almost my life.
Right.
Being called a terrorist by the FBI, I did not know that at the time, and the train crew being ordered to run over us. Couldn't have known in advance.
Right, that's right, that's right. But I want to make sure that the listening audience understands this order. And I have to ask, who would give an order to run over people on a train track?
Well, we know that the order came at least from the commander of the Concord, California Naval Weapons Station. We don't know whether there was an order that came from Washington. There were three of us vets on the tracks. This was a base that was sending weapons to El Salvador, the death squads of El Salvador and the Contras in Nicaragua. We had all been in those countries doing our homework, coming back, trying to educate the American people, the U.S. American people, and realizing Congress kept funding it. And so we went to the Civil Disobedience Direct Action at the base that was sending the weapons to Central America. We told them what we were doing, why, when we were doing whatever we were doing. We were completely open about it.
Right.
And there had been demonstrations at this base going back to the mid-60s. Mm-hmm. This was not unusual location for people to be demonstrating against the movement of, in the 60s, it was movement of troops and munitions mm-hmm. to Vietnam.
Right.
What we discovered after I was run over, I didn't get out of the way in time, was the train was speeding at 17 miles an hour, then a 5-mile-an-hour speed limit zone, and the train crew had been ordered that day not to stop because they said I was a terrorist and was going to hijack the train. Now, I couldn't have possibly even dreamt that.
Right.
In a wildest dream.
Brian, I'm going to stop you right there because I'm going to go back and find out how many new members we have for KBOO. But this is where we're going to pick up the story. So we're picking up at the train when we come back, okay? So we're going to go and find out how we can make those phones ring at 877-500-5266. It is rare that you get to be in the room in the presence of a national hero. And I don't use that term lightly, and I don't use that term often. And in fact, I don't think it's ever come out of my mouth. but I have to tell you, being here with a man like you, Brian, gives me so much faith in our future. And I know that our listening audience, they have to read this book. And so they need to call us at 877-500-5266. We know you want to renew your membership or you want a new membership. Isn't that right?
That's right, Joanne. Here's another Brian to another Brian in there. Hey, love you, brother. That is, boy, what an amazing story. I mean, my goodness. I'm about losing it in here, but I have a couple people to thank, Joanne, so let's do that. I want to thank Shanti from Portland. She says that KBOO is her lifeline to the world. That's fantastic. Thank you, Shanti, very much for calling. Amy of Portland is a renewing member. She says she loves KBOO. It's always on. Anytime she has any extra money, she wants to give to KBOO. Thank you, Amy, for that. And Michael of Portland was also a renewal. So thanks to those people for calling up and becoming members or renewing their membership in KBOO. And how do you do that, friends? How do you join Michael, Amy, and Shanta? You call us at 877-500-5266, and you say, I want a copy of Brian Wilson's book, Blood on the Tracks. I'm looking at this book, and Brian, what an amazing story. Introduction by Daniel Ellsberg. I think I've heard of that guy before. and for a $60 minimum pledge, friend, that's $5 a month, we can get you a copy of this book. Brian is in the studio with us right now. He'll autograph this book for you. I have 6 copies of this book available, so call 877-500-5266. We have 5 copies left. Okay, there's 1 gone, friends, so please take advantage of that right now. If you want a copy of Brian Wilson's book, Blood on the Tracks, call us, 877-500-5266. If you're listening online and you want to get the book, you need to call that 877-500-5266 number. If you don't want the book, you're listening online, you can donate there on the Donate Today jar. You can go to that and donate online. But if you want the book, you need to call 877-500-5266. And you name the amount, friends. The book, we're asking at least $60. I'm recommending people give $10 a month, $120. That is pretty easy for a lot of people to do. So, you know, that's a way to give to KBOO to make it work. And Joanne, while I'm thinking of it, I need to thank our restaurants this morning for providing food for our volunteers. So let me do that right now.
Okay.
Marcy Bakery, 1625 Southeast Bybee. Thank you. Savalia Thai, and I'm pronouncing that still wrong. I know, I'm sorry. 4806 Southeast Stark Street. And Vita Cafe, 3024 Northeast Alberta Street. These restaurants provide food for our volunteers to sustain us, to cajole and ask and plead. No, we're not going to plead, Joanne.
No, we're not going to plead.
I'm just going to politely ask if you would please go to the telephone. Join those people calling now, 877-500-5266. Joanne, as you said, it's a rare treat to have a national hero in the studio, and I believe we are in the presence of such a man. And I'm just, like I said, I'm overwhelmed.
Yeah, this is, I tell you, you know, I love doing this show, but every once in a while I get a guest that just, I'm just in awe, and I am just privileged today to have such an opportunity. And it sounds like with the phones ringing, you people that haven't made it to the phone yet, you're going to miss out on being able to get Brian's book,
yeah,
especially because it's a signed copy, and rarely do you get an author signed copy. Just want to give you that opportunity, because it looks like there may be only about four left and they're leaving quickly.
Come on,
so 877-500-5266. What I love is that Brian lives here. He's local. He's one of us. And let me share this quick story. I was telling Brian before we went on the air, I met him. The first time I met him was in some march. I was tired. I was moaning and groaning like, when is this thing going to be over? And I looked to my left. There's Brian on his bike, on his hand-controlled bike. And I look on the other side of me, and there's a woman that's close to 80 with her walker, right? And I had to stop and say, what am I complaining about, right? This is like ridiculous. And I shut my mouth, and I stayed as long as it took for it to be done.
Yeah, that's awesome, Joanne. Well, and so we want people to open their mouth.
Yeah, yes, we do. And pick up their phones.
Right, exactly. And dial what number?
877-500-5266.
That's right. And I think we may have a couple copies left of the book now here at the station. But, you know, people are calling, and people are interested in hearing what really happens to people. And you're going to get the truth here at KBOO. You're going to hear from people like Brian Wilson with his amazing story, his 40 years of activism. I mean, my God, that is amazing. I am so humbled right now, Joanne. I just can't even tell you.
You and me both, but I'm going to get back, Brian, and talking to the other Brian.
Let's do that.
And I want to thank our listening audience. I hear the phone lines ringing off the hook, and we love that. We want you to join us and our membership opportunities here. So, Brian, we stopped at the track, and so the trains are required to go at a speed limit of
five miles an hour. It's only a 3 mile track,
right?
And the speed limit is 5 miles an hour. And there's two spotters on the front of the locomotive whose job it is to make sure the tracks are always clear,
right,
because this train is carrying lethal munitions, bombs, rockets, small arms ammunition, white phosphorus rockets, and so forth. So they don't take any chances. And by the way, I spent 4 years in the Air Force as a installation security officer. I went through five trainings about how to protect military bases. And in Vietnam, I was commander of the combat security unit at a military base in Vietnam. So I knew that there's security precautions that personnel working for the government don't violate.
Right.
I mean, it's just very strict.
Right.
So it never occurred to me that they would be running over us.
Right.
I mean, the protocol was arrest the people who are blocking the trains, which they had been doing a lot. I hadn't, but this was my day. I was gonna block, and I was gonna be part of a fast for 40 days on water only.
Right.
Yes, nothing that my parents could understand, but, you know, this was part of my journey, and I had lost 50 friends, and people I'd met in Nicaragua had been killed by the Contras, 15 people in El Salvador had been killed by the death squads. These are my family.
Mm-hmm.
We are not worth more, they are not worth less, and so I'm basically saying, if you want to carry these munitions, We know they're going to kill people once they get on those ships in Suisun Bay, taken to El Salvador. You have to confront three vets who are saying, you can't do this in my name.
Right.
You have to at least deal with us. Well, the way they dealt with us on that day was they ran over me. The other two vets jumped out of the way just in time, but I was sitting, not crouching.
Right.
And I lost both legs below the knee. I had a fractured skull. I had 19 major injuries. All my ribs were cracked. My right shoulder was broken. Both arms were broken. My left ear was cut off. I had a gaping hole in my skull. My brain was pulsed. People, the 40 witnesses, they had 40 friends there. They were watching my brain pulsate through the lemon-sized hole that had been created by my cranium being actually ripped apart.
Wow.
And driven into my lobe, a piece of my skull. Of course, I don't remember any of it.
Right.
And it took me 28 days of recovery in the hospital. And
that's pretty phenomenal that it was only 28
days.
Well,
I had great care. Interestingly enough, also, that the hospital was receiving so many death threats against me. How do you explain it? They had to have a 24-hour armed security outside my room the entire time I'm in the hospital.
Oh.
People had to sign in, other than the nurse.
Right.
Guests had to sign in who they were. Like my brother came and visited me from New York State and so forth. That was shocking for me to hear that. I didn't even know that the first week.
Right.
I'm still kind of groggy. At any rate, then an FBI agent is fired while I'm in the hospital. I learned that there's an FBI agent who was fired after 21 years. And why was he fired? He was fired for refusing to investigate me and five others as domestic terror suspects. And I thought, and then now that guy, Jack Ryan, he and I have been friends ever since.
And he did a foreword in your book.
Yes.
You? Yes.
Yeah. And Noam Chomsky gave a nice plug to
yes,
the book,
he did.
Too.
Yes, he did.
So that was another shocking thing. But this is what happens to people all over the world when they stand up to power. You get clobbered. And it just happened to happen. It happened to a white European male in the United States who thought they wouldn't do that to me here.
Right.
But they did. So it was another very profound learning experience about the nature of my society, mm-hmm. the United States.
Now, how did you become from a veteran for peace to being a terrorist? Where did terrorist language show up?
The terrorist showed up when a year before the tracks, I fasted with three other vets on the steps of the Capitol for 47 days on water only. Mm. We were protesting the same thing, Reagan's policies of funding the death squads in El Salvador and the Contra terrorists in Nicaragua. For some reason, that action led the FBI to say that we were a domestic terrorist suspects. Mm. Don't ask me how they can get from fasting on water only on the steps of the Capitol
right.
to being terror suspects. But while we were fasting, Senator Warren Rudman from New Hampshire at the time, mm-hmm. he was on the Senate Intelligence Committee, he was quoted in the Boston Globe on about the 40th day of the fast, that we were the equivalent of Middle East terrorists holding a nation hostage.
Wow.
And that was a clue.
Right, right.
The thinking that was going on among the patriarchal power brokers of our country. And
I mean, what I'm having a hard time wrapping my mind around is how do you have veterans, people who have served the country, who have now said that war is not the answer to anything, to any question, how do you get from being veterans who have honorably served to being terrorists? It's mind-boggling.
It's mind-boggling. But the history of the United States is mind-boggling.
Yeah, that's true.
I've become a student of history,
right?
long history as well as short history.
Right.
I think all of industrial civilization has been mind-boggling. It's been diabolical from the very beginning, as has the origins of the United States. I mean, merciless Indian savages?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I think I'm the savage.
Mm.
And we have it completely backwards.
Well, I have to tell you that just to hear a white man say that, it's pretty phenomenal because we have, I don't know,
I'm
selective.
In recovery.
Yeah, you're in recovery, right. So we have selective memory as a society. We don't remember all the details that lead from point A.
We don't want to remember.
And we don't want to, right. And in fact, we don't teach it in school. So
no,
I want to know, was there repercussions for the conductor who ran you over?
Well, there were three train crew members, the engineer and the two spotters in the front of the locomotive.
Right.
They were all Vietnam vets, by the way.
They were all vets?
They were now civilians working for the Navy.
Okay.
This was a Navy base. They were at least, two of them were combat vets, and another, the engineer, I think, was a Vietnam-era vet.
Right.
They were not punished. Although the Navy recommended, a Navy report recommended they be punished with something like a 3-month suspension or something in their records. But the Secretary of Navy overruled that, and so they were not punished. I was charged with trespassing, but the Contra Costa County District Attorney for humanitarian reasons dropped the charges against me, of course.
Oh, because they didn't want that going to trial.
So we were in court for 3 years, and we settled after 3 years in court. But it was a very difficult time just knowing it. I wanted a trial, actually, because it was so obvious.
Right.
But the whole 3 years that we were in preparation for trial was pretty arduous. I was deposed by the train crew for 40 hours, 5 8-hour days, where they just grilled me as to, was am I a drug addict? Am I an alcoholic? And the strange thing is, even though I look kind of like I might be a druggie or something, I've just never been a druggie.
Mm-hmm.
I just never got into... I got into pot very minimally in the 70s and didn't catch with me like it does people.
Right.
I just never became part of my life. I drank some beer, but for the most part, my life has been very conservative.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my personal life is quiet.
Right.
I like to read.
Right.
I don't like loud parties. It was just a strange thing that they couldn't comprehend, and they kept saying, who paid you to be on the tracks?
Wow.
I said, pay me?
Right, right, right.
I said, nobody paid me to be on the tracks. Nobody pays me to do what my conscience tells me to do. I'm not an employee of anybody. And they said, well, is Ortega, the president of Nicaragua, giving you some kind of money? I just laughed. I said, come on, you folks, have you ever experienced a consciousness of your own that would perhaps motivate you to do something that had nothing to do with money? But I don't think they could relate to it.
No, I don't think they could either. And it is it's intriguing to me. One of the questions – first, I wanted to say we still want people to become members, but Brian's books are gone – this morning. But Brian, you can tell people where they can get your book if they want to get it on their own.
Well, I believe Powell still has books, and they can get them they can order them at any bookstore. But I think the other day Powell still had 3 or 4 copies left.
And do you have a website?
I do have a website. It's bw@brianwilson.com, and Wilson is 2 L's, so it's B as in Brian, W as in Wilson, @brianwilson.com. I have a domain name because I have a lot of essays on my website.
Wonderful. Okay.
The book has its own website, which is called bloodonthetracks.info. And And I do blog some on my website, and I have a Facebook page, too.
Wonderful. But we just want to make sure that people have a way to reach you because they're going to be so disappointed that they don't have the opportunity to get your book from us today. But I certainly hope that they will take the opportunity to get it somewhere else and go to your website. And so... So you were in court proceedings for 3 years, and then I have to say, Brian, for most people that would have been the end. They would have said, "Okay, I was an activist. I've been an activist. I've lost my legs. Okay, I'm done now. I'm gonna go back and do something else." But you. It just seems to propelled you into additional.
Well, I'm on a journey.
Activism.
You know, I'm on a journey of healing, recovering. There was a moment in Vietnam that where I had my epiphany. It actually so radically changed my whole life, and that was in a village. I looked in the eyes of this Vietnamese mother on the ground at my feet, holding three children. They'd all been bombed. They were all dead. They had all been napalmed. And I looked in her eyes because napalm had burned her eyelids off. And I was just kind of in shock, throwing up, I think. I looked in, staring at her eyes, and I realized when a Vietnamese lieutenant who was standing to my right, who had guided me to this, I was supposedly assessing the success of bombing missions.
I see.
I did not think of targets as being villages.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, in Vietnam, that's all the target. All the targets were, there were no military targets. It was
right.
The Vietnamese people. But when he asked me why I was crying and throwing up, I said, "Well, I'm looking at my sister. I'm looking at my family."
Whoa! So, Brian,
and that was nothing I had ever thought of before.
Right?
It came out of my soul.
Oh.
It was an epiphany.
Right.
And I really have never been the same since. And one psychiatrist I saw years ago in my recovery process said, you know, it was kind of like having an LSD trip. It changed the perceptors in your brain.
Mm-hmm.
I've never had an LSD trip. I'm one of the few in my peer group that have it.
Right.
But he said, you don't need it.
Right. That's right. Because you've already had it.
You already had it.
So, Brian, we're going to stop for just a second because, of course, we are in membership drive. And we're going to go back and talk to the other fabulous Brian who is going to let us know who we need to thank now and where we are in our process.
Jeez, Joanne, I hate to interrupt.
I know,
Brian, with it's like, oh my god.
I was doing the same thing. I was like, no, don't make me stop. But you know, we're here, we got business to conduct as well.
We do have business to conduct, and we have people to thank. I want to thank Marty of Portland, who says that we give the other side. KBOO does. You need to join Marty by calling 877-500-5266. And this just in, Joanne and Brian, we have one copy left.
Oh.
So I lied.
All right. Well,
we teased it. You know, we'll get so friends, 877-500-5266. One copy left of Brian Wilson's book, Blood on the Tracks. So get on that right now. Pam of Portland says that Portland is the only thing in town, and she is a new member. Thank you, Pam, for joining KBOO. Diana of Beaverton appreciates all of the programs on KBOO. Thank you, Diane, for calling in. Ryan of Portland says KBOO is the best radio station in Portland. Informative, interesting, and progressive. Aggressive. You got that damn straight right here. And I love this. D of Portland says, why KBOO? Oh my God. The only place I get the real story. She trusts KBOO. So if you trust KBOO, if you appreciate what Joanne does for you every Thursday morning here in KBOO, if you appreciate Brian Wilson being in the studio with us right now, talking about his fantastic book, His Life and Times, you need to call right now and become a member of KBOO at $10 a month, maybe $20 a month, whatever's comfortable for you. Our minimum membership we ask is $40, but you can give whatever you feel is fair. 877-500-5266. If you're on the web, Joanne, you can go to kboo.fm. What else?
That is absolutely true. Well, I just want to say that this has been probably one of my most favorite interviews so far. I try to bring people to my program on Voices from the Edge who people won't hear other places. that people don't really get the opportunity to hear. And so today I have exceeded my expectations. And I would really be grateful if you called 877-500-5266 to join us. When we talk about community radio, we talk about all of us as a community. And as a member, you get to help us make decisions on the programming we bring, on the activities that we're involved in the community. And I have to say, this is the best investment you can make in your community radio station. So please call us at 877-500-5266 or go online at kboo.fm and you can become a member that way. But we have fabulous volunteers who would love to take your phone call, who would love to tell you about all the great benefits you get with your KBOO membership. And if you call them at 877-500-5266, they will make that happen. And Brian, you get the last word, and then I'm going back and talking to the other Brian.
Well, absolutely. I will just cajole, encourage, ask, and implore people to go to their telephone right now. Joanne does this every week, and boy, is this not an example of fantastic radio from the community, for the community. That's what KBOO does for you every day of the week, 877-500-5266.
Thank you so much, Brian. So, Brian, for the listening audience, I am talking to S. Brian Wilson. His book, Blood on the Track, is the life and times of S. Brian Wilson. So just before we went back to Membership Central, I was saying to you, for most people, after getting run over by a train, after being near death in the hospital for almost a month, you would say, I survived this. I'm good. Okay. I'm going to go and live a nice, quiet life somewhere. And you were talking about the epitome that you had. So
the epiphany in Vietnam. Right. Yeah, which still is unfolding with me.
Which is still unfolding. You are such a fascinating man. But so that just compelled you to continue.
Well, yeah, I had a new peer group. I had people all over the world that had lost parts of their body because they stood up to power.
Ah, yes.
And so I started going back to Salvador and Nicaragua and meeting all these people that were injured. Now, I mean, I had seen them before, injured, the ones that survived attacks. And now and they embraced me completely because I was a Yankee that took on the power that paid the same price they do.
Right.
And so I didn't have to explain anything. I'm basically
so your family.
I'm basically a world citizen, and I've stood up to my country. I mean, they of course, I didn't ask to be run over.
Right.
That was their decision.
That's right.
And in the book, I call it a psychohistorical memoir because it's not just a memoir. I mean, it's not just a biography. It has 536 endnotes. Because it's a description of my journey that I had to incorporate all these other studies, anthropology and so forth.
Right.
And it has 112 color photos of my life journey. It has 8 pages of recommended readings. It has an introduction by Dan Ellsberg. And so it's quite a comprehensive book.
Yes, it is.
About U.S. history.
Yes.
In addition to my history.
Yes, I had noticed how your history and U.S. history is very interwoven throughout the entire book.
It describes what I did, you know, after I survived the train, and I spent a lot of time with the Zapatistas in Chiapas, Mexico, because I really love their revolutionary struggle.
Mm-hmm.
I would call them anarchists. They don't call them anarchists, but they don't want anything to do with the state. They're very autonomous. Mm-hmm. And so my experiences have constantly led me to being introduced to these interesting movements all around the world, people who said no to patriarchy, no to centralization. But we know how to live our lives. You just need to leave us alone,
right,
so that we can become autonomous in our local bioregions and so forth. And Zapatistas represent that. So that was one thing that I did after I survived the train. So, right, you know, there's no end to experimenting and learning about the life that as growing up in this country, we know so little about real life.
Right, right.
And I wanted to recover, and in order to do that, I had to learn how to be a human being.
This is absolutely incredible. I am talking with Brian Wilson, author of Blood on the Tracks. And you can't get it from us today, but there is a website that Brian gave, and I will make sure to post that on my Facebook and website. At the conclusion of the program later today, you'll find it there. I'm curious as to what you're thinking now when you think about over a decade of war that we've been involved in. How does that relate to your earlier experience, and just what conclusions are you coming to based on that?
Well, I come to some pretty radical conclusions, such as the necessity of industrial civilization to collapse, even as it may speed me into my own compost process, and even extinction of our species would be a conceivable correction for our wayward ways as a modern species. But I believe in local. I think the nation state of the United States is irredeemable and unreformable. So I don't even think that is a place that we should be identifying our humanity with, and that we should regroup locally around what I would call regional self-sufficiency. It's kind of the Neolithic model that guided human beings for thousands of years, or the indigenous model.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of rediscovering that we are capable of identifying our issues and resolving whatever challenges there are, and that we have to do it without being imperial. And when you have to start bringing stuff in from outside to make your life comfortable,
mm-hmm.
you become imperial very fast. So those would be my most mm-hmm. radical conclusions. In the process, I think everybody needs to be on a journey of questioning the whole paradigm they grew up with
mm-hmm.
and the consumerism that is our religion and our technology. And so simplicity, less and local, living with less, living locally and simply, those would be mantra words, kind of guiding
principles, kind
yeah.
of. I like that. And on that note, we're going to go back to membership, and we're going to talk to the other Brian, and we're going to find out how many people we need to thank now. And
well, you know, Joanne, it's, interestingly enough, I think people are so fascinated listening to Brian Wilson right
true.
Now that they have gone like...
They've stopped calling.
Yes.
No, we can't have that. No. No. The number to call, 877-500-5266. I can understand how they're so engaged in this program, because that's me. I'm sitting here listening to Brian, and when he stops, it's like, I'm still listening to Brian, right? This is your community radio station. We bring programming to you because we know that you want information directly from the horse's mouth. You don't want it filtered. You don't want it. You don't want sound bites. You want to hear from people exactly what their world experiences are. And today you have had that opportunity. We try to do that for you every single day here at KBOO. And we want you to join us. We need members. We are powerful. The more members we have, the more powerful we become. And community radio is becoming a lost resource around the country. That's why we want you to call 877-500-5266. Isn't that right, Brian?
That's right. And Brian Wilson, I wanted to ask you, have you done radio before then? And how do you find interviewing with Joanne here at KBOO compared to other stations? Have you been on other commercial stations before?
Lots of radio stations
and
around the country.
How is community radio different from commercial radio? I mean, I there are some obvious answers, but for you personally, as being able to talk about your book and your life.
Well, I just always love being on community radio, and KBOO is one of the best community radio stations I've ever been. I mean, wherever I've lived in the United States, I always need radio. I don't have television.
Right.
So radio is important to me, and usually I've had at least a public radio station, but this is such a genuine community-owned station.
Yes,
it's one of my lifebloods.
All right.
Wow. So if you appreciate Brian Wilson, his book, his life, his commitment, and his passion, show that support right now by calling us at 877-500-5266. There is one copy left of Brian's book. I mean, come on, friends. Don't leave one on the table.
That's right. Got to get it done quickly. And, you know, one of the things that I want to say is that it is so important that we understand that we have these kind of people living among our midst, right? It's like, Brian, I mean, most people, you're just such a humble man. Most people would have no idea of your life experiences, of your world travels, the challenges that you have faced and overcome, and your vision. I mean, and you have such a compassionate heart. It really reminds me that we have in this community some gems that we overlook, right? We're always trying to bring in the big national speaker. Who can we find from internationally to tell us what we are supposed to know? And right here in our own community, we've got a resource that's underutilized, undertapped. And today, we have the opportunity to tell people, hey, Brian lives here. He's one of us. Call us at 877-500-5266. Because I bet there are other people with similar stories that live out here in our community that we don't even know.
That's right, Joanne. I mean, everyone has a story. And KABU is the place where the community comes to tell their story. That's it. I mean, that's in a nutshell, that's what KABU is. It's for the community, from the community. We give to you, the listener. The listener, you need to give back to us to be able to provide this service. 45 years long, KABU is. Wow. I mean, that is an amazing feature funded by its listeners. I mean, come on, friends. You got to show some appreciation for that. If you're listening to me right now and you're not yet a member, what can we do except ask you to call 877-500-5266?
And don't feel like we're not going to thank you because we're out of Brian Wilson's books. We have all kind of other thank you gifts that we can give you. I mean, we've got coffee mugs and T-shirts.
Awesome new T-shirt, by the way.
It is very awesome. Yes. I agree. We've got all kind of thank you gifts because we understand that this is a partnership. When you become a member with KBOO, you are partnering with other community members who believe it's important to keep the airwaves available for the people, not the corporations, but the people. If you share that view and you're not a member yet or you haven't renewed yet, I know you want to go to the phone and call 877-500-5266. And if you're like me, I'm a multitasker constantly, and you've been listening and you just didn't want to stop because Brian Wilson was talking, you can do that on your computer by going to kboo.fm and becoming a member that way. You won't get the wonderful volunteers, wonderfully kind volunteers who are just standing by the phone waiting for you, but you could also become a member and listen to Brian at the same time.
That's right. And we have a pretty webpage.
Our website is fabulous. Yes, we have a wonderful webpage, but we also have wonderful volunteers. This is a community effort. So you and us working together, KBOO will be around for another 45 years, and we'll continue to bring you this kind of programming. So thank you, Brian.
You're welcome.
I appreciate your help in bringing members in, and I'm going to spend the next 5 minutes of quality time with Brian Wilson. It's amazing how quickly an hour goes, Brian.
Yeah.
It's absolutely
amazing. Incidentally, you know, I was on Amy Goodman, who's on your...
Oh, yes.
I was on her whole hour interview October 28th, I think, 2011.
Right.
So I was lucky enough to get on her show.
Wonderful.
Which was heard by your listeners.
Our listeners, yes. Well, fabulous. Yeah, well, Amy Goodman's fabulous. I'm glad that she had you on for her whole time because normally she's segmenting people in the spots. Well, and that's what I said to you. An hour is not enough time to do justice to your book, to your life experiences. But I want to give you an opportunity to share with us kind of some of the, as you said, you're still learning. So it's not like you've fixed it all, right?
All right.
So where are you now in this journey?
Well, I'm a hand cyclist, as you probably know.
Yes.
I hand cycle all over town. Probably some people have seen me hand cycling.
Yes.
I stopped flying 11 years ago because of ecological and political and psychological reasons.
Right.
Because I wanted to be more local. I wanted to be more bioregional. I'm a permaculture. With my wife, we permaculture garden here in southeast Portland.
Wonderful.
And I'm still writing essays. I'm always writing essays and putting them on my blog. I'm writing another book of essays. It's going to be a book of essays. I'm writing another book about the history of U.S. intervention in Korea, which virtually nobody knows anything about, but I've been to Korea 8 times.
Oh, okay.
Another special interest of mine. But I'm really interested in promoting anything local where people are beginning to take responsibility for separating themselves from, what should I say, certainly separating themselves from dependency on external inputs, the national government, corporations. The biggest way to stop supporting corporations is to stop buying their products, which means you have to think about what you really need.
That's right. So
you're not buying into and perpetuating the corporate system, and even buying fuel for vehicles, we're supporting corporations.
Right.
So I think I really want, I'm part of a process with people asking deep questions about how do we kind of participate and get ready for a kind of a quantum evolutionary leap in the human journey out of this addiction that we got to oil. One century blip in history, an addiction to oil, which ain't going to be repeated.
Right.
And so we have to face the music that we got hooked on convenience and comfort at the expense of suffering other places. We outsource the pain and suffering.
Right.
And I can't do that because I witnessed the outsourced pain and suffering. I participated in it.
Right.
And I saw the eyes of the people that we were killing.
Right.
And we left them, even in those villages, if they were alive. I still hear the moaning. You know, that haunts me.
Yes.
Because that moaning is my moaning.
And on that note, this has been a fabulous, fabulous program. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for becoming a member. If you were thinking about it, please do it, because we're just $60 away from our goal. 877-500-5266. This is Joanne Hardesty. See you next week. Same time, same place, same station. Have a great day. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an art that needs a scroll.
Hey, good morning from KBOO Portland. A busy Thursday morning for you. Coming up at 9:30, Linda Olson Osterlund interviews Emily Anthes about Frankenstein's cat cuddling up to biotech's brave new beasts. At 10, hear Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. At 11, on Between the Covers, Sarah Farahat interviews Pamela Olson about her new book, Fast Times in Palestine, A Love Affair in a Homeless Homeland. And at 11:30, SW Concert and Jen Chavez host The Film Show. But first, at 9, it's Press Watch with Teresa Mitchell on how corrupt the USA is and how shall we replace it. That's coming up next on KBOO.
Glowing cats, pigs with cystic fibrosis, robo-insects. Have you heard about them? What about goat milk made from human genes to stop diarrhea? Join me, Linda Olsen-Osterlin, for a membership drive special. Author Emily Anthes will talk about her new book, Frankenstein's Cat, Cuddling Up to Biotech's Brave New Beasts. If you care about animals and our future on this planet, tune in Thursday morning, March 28th at 9:30 for Frankenstein's Cat on A Deeper Look.
Spring Membership Drive, KABU Navigator Report. KABU has a mandate to provide access and programming that fulfills the art and education needs of our vast multicultural community. But several years ago, due to budget cuts, KABU stopped getting critical market information from a listener tracking service. How can we understand who listens to KABU and who does not? How do we meet their programming needs or understand how to communicate our services effectively to them without this information? We can't. And because we don't know, we have hesitated to change our programs, reach out to the greater community, and truly fulfill our mission. Please become a member today. Your dollars will help KABU purchase this vital community data, which will guide the revitalization of KABU now and into the future. Thank you. Your donations are greatly valued. This has been Lynn Fitch, KABU Navigator.
This KABU program is made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Yellow Pages, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New mobile applications available for iPhone and Android. For more information, you can visit pdxgyp.com.
And it's also made possible by Melhurst University's new Bachelor of Arts in Media and Film Studies, where you can explore how media in all forms affect not only how we view the world, but how we shape it. You'll learn the power of media and how you can use that power to become a participant in change. Now accepting applications. Details at melhurst.edu/KBOO.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know, giving you the tools to destroy corporate rule. You know, before we get to those news you're not supposed to know headlines, I just want to say I love sparky people. I love KABU for that. I love a lot of Americans, by which I mean both people in the United States of America known to me personally and people I know mostly.